Hi, this is Fabi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch,
the podcast where we talk about important things like
lo pasado, lo pasado. No, 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 it's wrong.
Hello, hello, hello.
Kisho, kisho, kisho.
Oh my God, everybody's in a singing mood today.
We are so happy today in the studio.
Oh my gosh. Well, let's get right to our special guest today. Mm-hmm. Our dear friend, Melissa Gonzalez, is here.
Bienvenida.
Ay, gracias, gracias. Me encanta estar aquí con ustedes.
Oh my God, bilingüe todo.
Pollito, chicken, gallina, lápiz, pencil, y pluma, pen.
Oh my God, I can't top that right now.
Oh my gosh, how are you, Melissa?
I'm doing good. How are you, mijos?
I am doing very well. Babelito, ¿y tú? ¿Cómo andas?
I am good and full and caffeinated thanks to our guest.
Okay, let's talk about that because Melissa nos invitó a lunchar today.
Yes.
And we went to this local place, Mexican restaurant, and we just ate a lot. What did you have, Melissa?
Tacos enchiladas.
Okay, explain.
It was so good. It was camarones con queso, and then you can put cabbage. Y la salsa con los chips. Nomás que me puse muy triste porque me quitaron los chips. I'm like, wait, I'm not done. It's like...
It was like a third plate of chips, so the guy's probably like... Enough.
Enough for you guys.
Yeah. Like the Maria Bamford joke. You're done.
Basically, they're kicking us out. Yeah. They take the chips away. It's over.
Yes.
What did you have, Babaluco?
I had a burrito de camarón con guacamole, arroz. It was good.
Damn.
It was really good.
Camarones, you're living the good life.
I am being spoiled by Melissa today.
I know. She treats us correct. I like that. I had a quesadilla.
Were in the mood?
I was in the mood for a quesadilla, so.
For a kick.
That's what, and I just wanted to eat a bunch of chips and salsa, and I attained that goal.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's like, you're like, yeah, you ate the whole first and second basket was just you.
No,
bitch.
We contributed to that. Because when my plate arrived, it was.
Oh my God.
This is a first for the podcast.
Oh my God. I'm losing it. My phone rang on Latinos Who Lunch. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll edit that out. I'll edit it out. No problem.
No. Leave it. Let the truth come out.
Oh my gosh. Well, Melissa, I know that we've been friends for a long time, and we went to school together at UNL. Well, not together juntos, pero together separados.
Ahí va nomás
juntos, pero no revueltos.
I went to go bug them all the time with Crystal and everyone. I'm like, hi, my little art friend.
Yeah, so what did you study at UNLV?
I studied landscape architecture. So I really focused on doing designs for different projects that we would do. And at that time, we did a lot of community gardens.
And now you're graduated and you are an official landscape designer.
Yes, I got my license in landscape contracting as soon as I got out.
So. Okay.
And now you have your own clients and your business is expanding.
Yes, I'm having a lot of fun. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of active work, but mucho en el sol, you know, with mis cachuchas and my...
fashion.
My fashion.
See, Melissa also needs Latinos Who Lunch cachuchas.
Oh, look at all these great ideas, but who's going to do the work? Don't look at me. Okay, well, before we get to your current career, let's go back. You are native to Las Vegas,
I am. I was born and raised here.
Yeah, me too.
I'm so proud to be from here.
I know.
I love my city. So, and as you know, it's been growing so much.
Yeah.
And I think that the community is growing in so many different levels. I think a lot of people are becoming more conscious about the environment, especially, and wanting to help, you know, the pollinators and even conscious, like, local businesses and mm-hmm. things like that. So it's been fun.
And your family is also from Las Vegas, or where are
no,
they from?
No, so my mom is from Guadalajara.
Yeah. La Perla Tapatía. Ouch!
Yes. All right. My mom is from there. And my dad is from some, you know, they're both from the ranchos, you know, but...
Yeah. Parral, where's he from? Just
I
kidding.
I can't remember. It's like this really long name, like... I asked my grandma not so long. I'm like, Grandma, I'm like, was that city, the rancho that my dad was, you know, born? And she was just like telling me like this long name. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't remember that. Like,
what state?
Well, it's like 2 hours away from Guadalajara, I think.
Oh, so Jalisco also.
Yeah, but they like settled in Tecalitlan, but that's not where they're from.
Oh, okay.
They call it Teca, but they're not originally from there. They just settled there before they came to the United States. Yeah, pero se vinieron muy jóvenes. My dad came here when he was 16.
Oh.
My mom around that age, but she started working in Mexico since the age of 12, like, you know, limpiando casas and, you know, and things like that. And then my dad came here, and I think like in his late 20s is when he started his own landscaping business. So
so that's where you learn it from first.
Yeah, you know, I try to get away from it, like I just really wanted to do my own thing, you know.
Yeah,
quote unquote, like, but I was always so involved in his business, and it was my part-time job. I mean, when I was in college, and my dad always pushed me to try to be like, I don't know where he heard from it, but like he always wanted me to be like some sort of like landscape architect or an architect, and he's like, just do it, it'll be fun, you'll be great. I'm like, no, papa, yo quiero ser una designer for brides. I'm like, are you crazy? I want to be an interior designer. I wanted to do all these different things when it involved with fashion and homes, like, you know, because when I went to high school here, it was mm-hmm. VOTEC.
It was a vocational school.
Yeah. So
is
I did
still
drafting.
Around?
It's called something else
it's
now.
It's called SECTA. And I'm like, why did they change the name? It's like, it's been there forever.
Sounds like a cult.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sectology.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So I did drafting there. So that's when I really discovered
your love.
Know, yeah. And then, you know, me fui a España. Me fui de vaga con Cristal allá.
How long did you go study in Spain?
I just studied for a semester.
Okay.
Crystal stayed and she stayed longer, but...
Shout out to our friend Crystal, who designs all the Latinos Who Lunch logos and the photographs and...
And hopefully the merchandise will come one day.
I know. Okay, so you were over there living your fantasy in Spain.
Yeah, that was fun. It was fun times, crazy times. But
we were just talking about it, how... They were so paisas, Cristal y Esta. They would go to El Maya, to that club, like the Mexican club, or Escapate, that was the name of another one. And then they were in Spain and they saw a poster for Jaguares and they're like, Jaguares in concert. Yeah. They're so excited.
Yeah, we went to go see them over there. It was so much fun. I mean, just the culture, we just fell in love with it, you know, and the food and
y el
even
alcohol.
The people. Y el Don't get me started on those parties.
Oh my gosh.
No, yeah, we were fun. It was fun times.
That's cool. Was it like cultural shock when you got there, or you felt at home in Spain? I mean, it's a completely different culture.
It's a different culture. Like, you know, they have their siestas. So that was a little strange for me because, you know, I remember one time wanting to go to the market just for something to eat, like something simple.
Mm-hmm.
And they would be closed. And I'm like, are you serious?
Those
it's like,
huevones.
I'm like, I want my snacks. Like, what's going on here?
Uh-huh.
And then also just like the people are a little bit more, I don't know if it's the right word, but like more blunt about things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember when we were in school because, you know, we studied there, and we took lunch. There was like this older man that was serving our food. And then I was like asking politely, like, oh, buenas tardes. Me podría dar, you know, tal y tal cosa. And then he's like, aquí nomás se dice lo que quieres. Like, he was basically telling me, like, you don't need to say hi, how are you? Like, just tell me what you want. And then I'm like, oh my God, I was like, you know what? I'm not from Spain, but you know, that's just not, you respect your elders. Like, I basically told him something like that because he looked like he could be my grandpa. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it was a little bit of culture shock in that perspective. So
what was I going to ask? Do you find that a lot of people that are super patriotic when it comes to, you know, like their country.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because they also, they're very, les gusta, like have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would celebrate. You would see a lot of celebration. I can't even remember what celebration it was, but like during the holidays, like mm-hmm. in December, November, December, I see on like their parades and you would put on wigs, you would buy wigs, you would buy balloons. And I really like got involved in that. Like That's it was really cool. fun. So yeah, they're very like, like they love their country.
Yeah, because that, I mean, I don't want to generalize, but every person that I met from Spain, they mm-hmm. have this like very patriotic sense mm-hmm. to it. And it makes sense because this idea of the nation, it's a Spanish thing. It's like Isabella and Fernando, and they basically created the first country in the world. I mean, you had the world divided in regions, but this idea of one country united by one language and one religion, mm-hmm. it's a Spanish thing. And I still see that reflected in the culture today.
Yeah. And you know what? And a lot of them love Mexico. They love Mexicans. So they love to travel there.
Is that why Guild Girl?
Yeah, I remember we met this woman at one of our favorite Italian restaurants that we would like to go eat at. And mm-hmm. it was actually an Italian family from Napoli. Like they moved to Spain to start mm-hmm. their own business there. And one of the women that was like, I guess she would go there all the time, but she's like, oh, I love Mexico. And, you know, I love going to las playas y todo. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like, yeah. And so we have a beautiful country too.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So, okay. So then you're back in Vegas, you get your degree, and then you start your own business.
Yeah.
And what I love about your business is that you are also very in tune with Mother Earth, right? And you do a lot of your designs, landscape designs, are not only sustainable with the desert environment, but they're also keeping environmental issues in mind. For example, I just did a workshop with you at our local bookstore here in Las Vegas called The Writer's Block about pollinators, specifically solitary bees mm-hmm. that are really important for the environment and pollination because a lot of bees are dying because there's not a lot of environments, first of all, for them to live in because we're wiping them away. So mm-hmm. just I want you to kind of maybe talk a little bit about, tell me a little bit about your business and then how you're including all that in it.
Yeah, so I'm like sort of a geek and a nerd when it comes to doing research.
Because it's a beautiful thing.
Right? Yeah. I just love learning new things. I love to read. I like to take my time with it.
Yeah.
And so a couple years ago when I first started UNLV, I went to this workshop at the Springs Preserve and I was like, I won this raffle and it was like a box and it just had a bunch of holes in it. And I'm like, what is this? You know,
like, can I get my money back?
Excuse me. You know, and like the woman that was teaching the class, she's like, please promise me that you're going to put this in your yard. And I'm like, well, what is it? And she was just like, they're for solitary bees. And I'm like, okay. And she didn't really give me more explanation than that. So it took me a couple of months to really put it out there because I started to do my research. And so solitary bees is what's considered not a social bee, sort of like the honeybee, because the honeybees live in hives. And solitary bees, they live on their own and they don't make honey. They don't live with other bees. They just live by themselves. And usually you can create like, you know, bee motels is what they call them, or bee boxes. Mm-hmm. And that's where they will lay their eggs. And their main purpose in life is just to pollinate and to mate, you know. How fun is that? Like,
how it should be. No.
Yeah, so I was very intrigued because 90% of bee species, 90% of bee species are solitary.
What?
So not a lot of people know about that. So I'm like, oh my God, how cool. So, you know, I was going into school and I really loved butterflies and things like that. So I always try to create butterfly gardens and, you know, just pollinator gardens in general.
Mm-hmm.
One of my projects that I did was the Henderson Bird Viewing Preserve, which was very, very dear to my heart. And it's just an amazing place where people can go visit other than the strip and things like that. Mm. So my business coming into that, my dad really wanted to close his business like by the time I was about to graduate.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you know, is this something that you want to do or did you want to go work for a firm? Like, you know, like he basically was handing me his clients and was like, go ahead and you can do what you want to do.
Oh, that's nice.
So it was a traditional landscape management company, you know. And so I really...
What does that mean, traditional landscape?
Like, what I mean by is like mow and blow.
I know about that. Sorry.
You can tell me about that later. I don't know what that means.
So okay, mow and blow. So yeah, maintaining the landscaping and
right, and doing like little plant enhancement projects here and there.
Did she work for private homes, or was she work for big casinos, or
My dad?
He
worked for mainly residential and homeowners associations. And so I was like, you know what? Like, if I'm going to do this, because at that time, too, before I graduated, I was really trying to, okay, because I'm so involved in my dad's business and knowing that he was going to close his business, I just sort of like, I want to be my own business owner, you know? And I'm like, let me try it out with doing more sustainable practices is what I mean. Is stepping away from the traditional, like, not just mowing and blowing, but like, taking out those chemicals that we're putting into the landscapes, because it's one of the major reasons, like the pesticides, is why we're wiping out bees. But it's a lot of the times it's because people just don't know the effects of it. You know, they think it's just a simple spray and to kill your weeds and things like that. So there's other products that we could use that are less toxic that could help the pollinators. But also I was getting involved more into creating my business is because I really want people to heal with their gardens, like to really just enjoy their outdoors. Like if they can't go out into nature, like Wetlands Park or something like that.
I love the wetlands.
Yeah, it's my favorite. It's so beautiful. Like imagine to have just a little piece of that in your own home. Like how healing would that be for you? And at the same time, we're healing pollinators. We're healing the urban wildlife because they really do need our help. So that is why I started my business. I'm like, I'm just going to have fun with it. And I'm going to teach and, you know.
The public, yeah.
Right, yeah. Like we did that workshop together. Yeah. And so that's what Mother Studio is really about. It's about the educational component and teaching people not just about bees, but like also plant communities that we could create to better health for us. Because we have our senses. We have our smells. When you look at things or when you touch things, like, it's a very common thing. Like if you were to stand outside and just look at bees do their thing, like you're like, it's just such a well, for me, I guess I can speak for myself. I'm like meditating with them. It's so crazy. Like it's so healing for me too.
But it's so fascinating to me because there's so many things that you take into consideration that I wouldn't even thought about. Because we do, like, what do we do when we want to do something with a garden? We'll go to, I don't know, like Home Depot or whatever, buy a couple of plants, and then they'll die by the winter. But like we were talking in the way for coffee, and she was talking about altitude, for example. So how like certain plants will not, even within the valley here in Vegas, and the fact that you just order all these plants for that specific altitude in this part of the valley that are friendly to the butterflies, that are friendly to the bees. We don't think about those things. We just buy the pretty flowers that are going to look good for that party, and that's it, you know?
And people have these fantasies of like what desert and landscaping is.
Yeah.
Like when you watch a movie about Las Vegas, there's always this scene.
Saguaros.
With saguaros and like, that's, I'm pretty sure that's in Arizona. You know what I mean? That's nothing.
Nogales, the Sonoran Desert or the Mojave Desert. It's the Joshua Tree.
Totally different environment. Like,
You know what? And, I think it was last holiday. We love to go to Ethel M, you know, for their lighting show.
So there's a chocolate factory in Las Vegas, Ethel M Chocolates, but they have this huge cactus garden and they light it up at night. They put Christmas lights up during Christmas time.
It's so beautiful. And so, you know what I thought was funny? And I'm like, and I was telling Diego, you know, my partner, and I'm like, why would they did like the new logo. I don't know if you've seen it, like their new branding marketing thing, but they have like the shape of the state of Nevada. And then, so you know how they usually put like a star of the city of like where Ethel M or whatever brand it would be. And they put a saguaro. And I'm like, why did they put a saguaro? What about the the fucking Joshua tree. Yeah. Like, really? Yeah. Like, wrong desert.
So, yeah, they're so beautiful.
But see, this is why. Yeah. This is why understanding the history images is important, because this almost like exoticization of the West goes way, way back. I don't remember. I think it was a podcast, 99% Invisible.
Yeah.
They talked about palm trees in LA and how the Spanish first planted palm trees, because in a way the Americas for the Spanish, for the Franciscans, for all these religious orders was the New Jerusalem. So they wanted to, in a way, create sort of like that environment, an oasis. Yeah. So, California was a good place for that. So you have all these palm trees that now are so important for our fantasies that we have about Hollywood, but they don't contribute anything to the environment. They take water, and at the end, they're a waste. They look beautiful, but they're a waste.
They're very invasive.
Yeah.
Like,
and there's also this mentality that a lot of people still have from like the mid-century in the United States, where so many cities were popping up. Las Vegas was one of them. It had its first big boom in like the mid-50s. Mm-hmm. And it was all about changing the landscape. Like, we want Las Vegas to be an oasis. So, you know, Palm Springs went through the same thing. They started building the Salton Sea out there right by it. So it was all about transforming these dead in air quotes, spaces to these beautiful green oases, right? And oases. it's taken almost 50 years for us to start reprogramming our idea of what is beautiful in the desert. Because even when I was young, you know, I loved going to grassy areas and hanging out in parks that were just like with ponds and no sé qué, no sé cuarto. But now whenever I travel, I miss the desert. Mm-hmm. And there's finally parks in Las Vegas that are embracing the desert and just putting in trails in desert areas. And that's, anyways, but it still exists in Vegas, right? We have casinos that are surrounded by water that have like dolphin pools, and like people, you know, people are obsessed with sharks and they have sharks in their swimming pools, and like, what is happening, you know? So it's this like long history of,
do you find that, what Fabi's talking about, do you find that you have to educate your clients when you're about to design something, because there's fantasies of the desert and then there's the realities of the desert.
The reality. And you know what? Don't get me started on that, because like, I am so pissed about, because we have this thing called conversions, you know, where people like a lot, because our city is not that, how many years is our city?
Like 100 years old.
Okay, very young. Yeah. And so a lot of these communities, a lot of these neighborhoods, they were built in the 70s, 80s, and they took a bunch of grass out when the rebate went through for the last...
In the 90s, yeah.
Uh-huh. And so now there's a lot of trees that are dying because they were used to, since they were young, they were used to the moist and the nice grass, and they put grass everywhere. Everywhere, just like you said, like an oasis, and people wanting to be, you know, that greenery in the desert, you know, and palm trees and all of that. But a lot of these trees, like the pine trees and the ash trees, you know, se están muriendo porque les quitaron el clima que tenían.
Yeah.
And then me ponen cuidado a mí, like, you know, hey, what's going on with my tree? My tree is dying. I'm like, well, whoever did your conversion 10, 15 years ago, they did not put your drip system correctly, and that's why your tree is dying. So you it's not as green as when you saw it when it had grass. So it's really crazy. So that's just the management side, you know? Yeah,
and I can always tell when a landscape architect or designer is conscious of that, because I'll notice, like at UNLV, for example, they'll keep the grass around the tree because they know that grass is helping it and it's sustaining those roots.
Right.
But then you will go to like apartment complexes where they get a rebate for redoing their landscaping and they want to do it the cheapest possible. And it's just like, they just roll out the rocks and the trees are there like barely hanging on.
Yeah, with the little dripper.
And something that you told me recently was the value of trees.
Yes.
Which I want you to tell Babalito about that, because I didn't realize like what the value of a tree is actually in on a property.
Right. So, you know, a lot of the properties, like the associations, let's mm-hmm. just say, you know, like a homeowners association, it's like an urban forest. Like if they've been in grass areas, like let's say they only took 20% of their grass out 10, 15 years ago, and they have over 200 trees, like imagine the forest that you're stepping into. It's an amazing thing. And so the value of trees are like thousands of dollars, especially as they mature and if mm-hmm. they're healthy, because not only do they clean our environment, like our air, they, you know, we get a lot of winds and dust, like all of that pollen and all of that dust that's the wind, you know, mm-hmm. blows everywhere. The trees really help you to have clean air. Mm-hmm. It's holding all those dust particles mm-hmm. from our
atmosphere.
Yeah, our atmosphere.
Especially here, man.
Yeah.
And then also with landscapes in the city, it helps like lower crimes. Why? Because people están más tranquilos, you know, they're in the shade or they're enjoying their outdoors. Like how amazing is that? Like trees are like, they're beautiful and they're yeah. great.
Sublimation.
And having trees. A tree next to your building reduces your air conditioning bill, right?
Exactly. Imagine like how, I mean, it's, you know, trees have a lot of integrity. Trees, they're like us. They're not humans, but they have feelings. Like it's so crazy. Like, you know, when they're dying back, they're saying, hey, I'm dying. Help me. Yeah. You know, it's like, there's always signs. There's signs of just like how our bodies give us signs. Like, you know, I'm not feeling too well. Like, take a look at me. It's the same thing with plants.
So with that in mind, if you, let's say you approach a new project mm-hmm. completely like tabula rasa, like nothing on it, mm-hmm. what will be that ideal garden for a place like Vegas? Considering now the value of trees, considering the altitude, considering the water, the dust, like what is your primordial garden?
Yeah. So of course, keeping, the desert plants, like really try to design with that in mind, because mm-hmm. the less, if we use more native plant species, like the better that it's going to look and the better it's going to live, right? Yeah. But my main thing is to help pollinators and help them heal, but okay. I want my clients to heal in the gardens. I may not say that to them directly, like, but that's my main mission, is to really get people to be in their backyards or their front yards and just be with their kids or grandkids and just really enjoy being there, because we are on the run from like early mornings till late afternoons. And sometimes if you get home stressed, you don't want to take that on to your family. Like just go outside and just enjoy your wine or your beer or your water and just be outside and yeah. chill out, you know? So I really just want to create that environment for people and for the associations, because that's my number one client, you know, as homeowners association. So
when you took over your dad's business and started your own, was there transitional like aches with the communities that you're working with the homeowners associations? Like, because of course your dad worked a certain way and you learned a lot from your dad, but you have your own style of running your business. Mm-hmm. Was there any growing pains with your company?
I feel like because I was so active with his clients anyway, they knew who I was.
And they trust you.
There was a trust there.
There
already.
Was a trust there. Yeah. And I remember one of my clients was like looking at my dad when we announced that we, you know, I was going to be the new owner and starting a new business and things. She's like, she looked at my dad and she's like, you're not going anywhere, are you? Like, and I was like, I'm here. Like, you know, and my dad's like, no, no, no. And you know, my dad is he's amazing. We work so well together. We work so much together. I think that he really was trying to pull back and I'm like, no way. It's like tug of war. Like he's like, no, you got to figure this out.
Yeah.
You know, but he helps me out a lot into getting projects completed because he's just muy trabajador, mi papá, you know, and he's still young. I mean, yeah, he's 60, but you know, he's muy joven, mi papá, muy activo, pero, I think the growing pains was maybe a little bit with my employees, you know, just because it's, you know, a man, you know, leading.
And now then, you're the HBIC now. Okay.
Hola.
I've arrived.
Yeah. Oh,
they're
yeah.
not used to so your, many things to consider.
Yeah, not yeah. used to your managing style, right?
So. Right. So, yeah, it's still a learning experience to be a leader because I really want to be a soulful leader. I don't, yeah. I'm not, how do I explain it?
Like, you have a very positive energy about you and you don't want to be mean to people, but sometimes you got to kick away one in the ass and make sure they do their work, but you they have to figure out that balance.
Right.
I'm guessing. That's what
you,
I don't know.
No, maybe you got it all
right. I bet
right.
you throw some truths to yeah. these clients because yeah. they have to learn. People have to learn.
Yeah. yeah. And this is something that I tell my employees. I'm like, do you know what we are? And they're like, we're landscaping. We do landscaping. I'm like, yeah, but we are guardians of the land. Remember that, because not only are we doing maintenance and things like that, but I need you to understand that we need to preserve what we are working with and just expand from that. Because a lot of, like I told you, a lot of my associates, my clients are like homes that have been built in the 70s and 80s. And, you yeah. know, they're like over 30 years old. It's we're dealing with mature trees. We're dealing with mature plants. Yeah. And so I really try to make them think like that. And then, you know, when I talk about the bees and stuff like that, they're just looking at me like I'm crazy. Like, you know, when I first started,
yeah,
because I'm like, no, we are not using that toxic chemical to kill weeds anymore. We're going to use this.
Yeah.
And that's been the hardest transition, is because they're very traditional old landscaping.
Cause it's easy.
Cause it's easier and mm-hmm. faster. Sí, pero no me mata la hierba. Like, it takes forever. And I'm like,
y la hierba se movía.
Well, that's what they want. And I'm like, uh-uh.
We're going to lambada this hierba yeah. for a while.
And then they look at me and they're like, do you know how expensive, do you know how much you're spending? I'm like, I don't care, because the bees don't like it. I'm like, pollinator.
Well, and in the long run, your gardens are going to look much better than the ones that are like
right.
half dead and like cracked out on whatever.
On pesticides, Roundup, you know. Yeah. yeah. And so that's been the hardest, because they think money-wise. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, but this other chemical does it faster and it's cheaper. And I'm like, no, but that's not our mission.
Yeah.
Not anymore. You right. know,
I wanted to ask you, just changing the subject a little bit, about bees, because we have the almost like a stigma to bees, especially
yeah.
in La Raza. Like I got bitten by a bee when I was a kid, and I remember stung. We had yes stung by a bee, and we had a little panal
uh-huh.
and like we killed it, and it right. wasn't even a question,
right?
And it was like, this is toxic, get it out of here,
right?
But it was never a question, or we were never educated in school, at least us,
right?
But I mean, I'm also 30 years old, 35.
No, yo igual, like nobody, I don't remember in school like people telling, you know, teaching us about the importance of bees and other pollinators. Like, yeah. do you remember, Fabi? I mean, you went to elementary school here.
And I think, but the TV, like Magic School Bus, never, like, we never had a class about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or the only pollinators that are really celebrated are, like, exotic ones, like hummingbirds and, like, you
the
know.
Butterflies. The gentle
ones. The ones that are fantasy.
The ones that are pretty and,
yeah.
you know.
Right.
So, yeah, you never... Yeah, you know, I don't think that was ever an issue. I think now, because of the recent studies, and even though some people choose to ignore them, but mm-hmm. I mean, now we understand that bees are dying rapidly.
Right.
So
and they're
right.
essential too to the environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are, and so that's, you know, talking about, you know, our workshop and stuff. That's why I have Mother's Studio for that, you know, to try to teach people about the importance of pollinators, especially solitary bees, because, you know, 90% of them are solitary, and
because they're solitary, they usually don't attack, right?
Yeah, they're less aggressive. They're mm-hmm. like, if you're like bothering them, if they feel bothered, they just fly to another near garden, you know?
Yeah.
And so with honeybees, I've never had, or bumblebees, I've never had, like, yo soy loca. Like, I'm like hiking or whatever. And Diego ya está ya casi para el final. And yo estoy todo acá abajo because I'm like recording and watching like bees and watch, you know, just doing their thing. And I'm like super close and I've never been attacked. So I don't know. Everyone's different. I'm like,
yeah.
maybe the person had a weird vibe that day. And mm-hmm. the bee's like,
they sense, you know, that. They had the fucked
get away
up
from
aura.
Me.
Uh-huh. They need to get their chakras lined up right. before they come for me.
But but it makes sense what you're saying. It's just, you know, it's people don't know, like, you know, like here locally, like we were talking about, you know, beekeeping recently. And it's like, just call your local beekeeper, even if they live in Pahrump, you know, call them and be like, hey, I have this panal or like this hive, like, you know, growing on the side of my house. Can you come take care of it?
And they will.
And they will. They'll come and
instead
they'll
take calling
it.
Pest control. Yeah,
right. Exactly. Yeah. And because also like the collapse of the bees, you know, like it's really sad. And a lot of the beekeeping, because they've, you know, been doing it for a long time and even for generations too, like the business owners, like les afecta mucho. It's like their bees are dying, you know, and now they're, you hear stories about robotic bees. I'm like, what is going on? Like,
that's
crazy. I don't want robotic bees. I don't want my kids learning about that. Like, if I haven't had kids,
I saw videos
of
farms in China being pollinated by hand.
Like manually,
manually by people.
That.
That's insane.
That's insane. And also the bee, it's funny because it's like such small creature and so important. But I remember in the 90s in Mexico, like, I think it happened here too. Las abejas africanas, like, they were racialized too. And it becomes this like danger thing.
Yeah.
The Africanized bees.
Yeah.
That was a huge thing in the 90s too.
Oh like, my God, I remember. And you know what? Back in the day, when I was in high school, which is really strange because I didn't really get into bees until like when I was in college in my early years. But when I was in high school one day, I got home from swimming practice and I was in my room. I was like, I'd rather fall asleep before my next sport than to eat dinner. Like, that's how tired I was.
Oh, my God.
And, y luego que voy escuchando una abeja, like, in my room. But I thought it was outside, like, by my window. And then I see another one and then another one. I'm like, oh my God, they're inside my room. Like literally so I closed the door and I told my mom and we stepped out of the house. Y estaba todo the swarm of bees above my home. I guess what was happening was that they were actually locating where their next
hive was
going to be. And they wanted to be in my attic or something. And I'm like, are you serious? Yeah. So they were already like whispering to me, like,
like, girl, I'm coming for you. Yeah. Help.
Yeah. And see, the ahí también la ignorancia, like, we didn't know, you know.
Oh,
and
you
so my dad called pest control. Like, it's not the way.
Yeah.
So.
But see, this is why we need to be learning this in school.
Yeah.
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 Well, now we're telling the people, we're letting them know that we shouldn't kill bees. So let's go through a couple tips.
Okay.
Like, let's say I have a rooftop garden or a patio garden or even a garden, right? Mm-hmm. We have a little yard. What are some things you can do to start improving your spaces to make them more sustainable and eco-friendly?
So no space is too small to help you and the pollinators. So
okay, put that on a t-shirt.
So what I would do is find plants that are fragrant that to your taste, even the color and the texture. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. It's going to help you relax to begin with, like, especially if you try, like, chaparral sage is one of my favorite plants. And they do really well in our environment. Like, really try to just go to your local nursery and just say that you want nectar plants to help, you know, the bees or butterflies, anything. And just really use your containers for that. And then if you have, like, a bigger yard and you want to do it yourself, just Google, like, native
Google
plants.
Hashtag Google Loca. Yeah.
Yeah, and just go visit and just and look at the signs. Like, one of our local nurseries, they have, like, little signs, and it says, you know, it grows this big. And really look at that, how big they're going to get. Because if that's not the size that you want in the plant in your yard that's unsustainable to you, then you're not helping at the end of the day.
I remember I bought some sage once.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're thinking sage like an herb that you're going to use for your kitchen, and it was this little thing, una mata así chiquita, and then by the end of the summer it was a giant bush that like took over my whole garden because I didn't read the label, and the label it says, you know, like
six by six
feet. This thing's gonna take up 6 feet, and you're like, ah, it's gonna be fine, you know. No, it's for real,
right?
Yeah
So that's
read, that's right. Your
people. Research,
read, people, Google it. Oh my gosh.
And there's like, It's interesting because there should be like a guidelines like of ethics on all of our practices, because we always talk about race here, we always talk about gender, we talk about those things, but they should be applied to all kinds of different aspects of your life.
Right.
And this idea of the garden is something that
it's sacred.
Yeah,
it's a sacred environment for people, and whether they know it or not, like when you are you know, when you're like just enjoying a tree, you'll see a bird and you're like, wow, like I've never seen that. Or butterflies, and you're just like, wow, how pretty. Like every time I see like a monarch butterfly, I'm like, ay, te mando mucho amor, safe travels. Like, you know.
That's awesome.
Or when I see those solitary bees, like, oh, like, you know, today I got, you know, that plant order.
Yeah.
And this is at a property that, where I just take my trucks and things like that. And so I got this plant order, and literally within seconds, there were butterflies already in my plants.
Awesome.
Like, qué bonito, like amarillos, y luego había otro como azulito. And I'm like, oh my God, I've never seen you before. I'm like, I need to, you know, and I research.
Yeah.
And so it's just fascinating to me that's my meditation right there. And it's my sacred, like I don't know how to explain it. Like there's days where when I touch the soil and I'm like gardening or whatever, there's like this feeling, this vibe that sort of goes into my heart. I can't even explain it without sounding too woo-woo or crazy.
No, it doesn't, because I have really fond memories of growing up in the hood, in the projects here in Las Vegas. And it's because my grandmother created this environment in her little patch of yard that she had, you know, like on like 28th Street in Charleston, like that area over there. She always had a rose garden, and then eventually like she would add more plants, or she would put like these beautiful really tall flowers around the ash trees that were out there in that old part of Vegas. And at one point I remember that she planted corn like on the side of the apartment. And nobody ever said anything to her because it was just like so beautiful and kind of created a community garden without even wanting to, because she doesn't like people, but you know, but it was just so peaceful and colorful with all the roses. And her name is Roselia too, to top it off. So I was like, but I remember her always talking about, you know, in Guatemala, you know, you would get this plant and you just put a leaf down and it would grow. You know, she was always tying her gardening to her roots in her home country of Guatemala. Right. So it was kind of a way to still tie herself to the earth and to her original place of origin. Because in Guatemala, I feel like they had a farm, they had a garden, they had mango trees, they had everything over there. Well, because they had to sustain themselves.
Right.
I mean, my family had like my Guatemalan side, there's like 12 brothers and sisters or something. So they were working for themselves, you know, barely making it. And that's why they had to come here. But still, they have this really nostalgic memories of gardening. And I feel like those traditions just kind of carry on, because even with my Mexican side of the family, everybody has plants in their house. And even if they're fake plants.
Como la amiga de mi mamá, did I ever tell you that?
No.
She had this little plant and she like water it and it looked beautiful. And one time she went on a trip, she's like, oh my God, I never watered my plant. And she come back and it was still alive. It was made out of plastic.
Oh my God.
She watered it for a year, girl.
Oh my gosh.
But you know that it's interesting what Fabi's mentioning, because I also think that now with the advent of hipsters, community gardening has become this privilege thing, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like the idea of the community garden, the idea of some of these practices, somehow they become a privileged practice. But we have to go back to our roots, and we have to remember who we are, and we have to remember that this is something that everybody can practice and everybody should practice. It's just that it takes a little bit of work, a little bit of research.
Right. And you know, that's why I also feel so grateful that it started all with our roots, because listening to stories from my mom, que trabajaban en los, you know, in the fields growing maíz, que el frijol y que sabe que otras cosas. Like, I'm like, wow. And then my grandma being obsessed with plants and things like that. So it's like, I'm so grateful that I'm doing this type of work, and that it's, I don't know if it's coincidence or whatever, but I'm just thrilled to do it in a way that, for whatever reason, the bees really have come to my life in a very important way, because I don't know, it just feels like a mission now. It feels truly like a passionate mission, you know, so we can all help in some shape or form with whatever you know, you look up to or are into.
Yeah, I feel like maybe you found your purpose. Yeah. And now you're spreading your mission to all of us now here.
I'm pollinating.
Girl! You better watch out. You are pollinating. Okay. Well, on that note, Melissa, we're going to take a break.
Okay.
I got to clean this pollination off. And no, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Melissa Gonzalez of Mother Earth Studio with some recommendations and, you know, some bullshit. Okay.
Hey, Fabi.
What's up?
You know how your career is blowing up?
Nope, but go ahead. What are you going to say?
Well, soon I know you're going to find yourself in need of some employees. And you know what's the best way to find the best candidates for your new exciting career?
Tell me what.
It is ZipRecruiter. That's right. ZipRecruiter con la Z.
Okay.
With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100 plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through their site within one day. Solo un día.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Latinos. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Latinos. One more time, try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Latinos.
Así o más fácil.
And we're back.
What up?
Hi. Okay, well, this is the part of our show where we like to do some recommendations and, you know, recommend a podcast, a book, a website, a person, whatever you'd like to talk about. So we always let our guests go first. So
yes,
go.
Okay. Yeah, boy, yeah, boy. So I would like to recommend this website where no matter where you live in the United States, you can really help your garden thrive.
Okay.
You know, it's called pollinatorpartnership.org, and you can find your city and the type of plants that you can help for pollinators, and just more educational, you know, information about all those different things about the plants that grow in your region and your city, and then also what are you contributing to, like what are you helping at?
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it's really cool. And then another website that I like to do, like, find inspiration, and it's because it's so aligned to some sort of my principles and values, is an actual landscape architecture firm based off of California, and it's called baselandscapes.com. And I remember meeting one of them, the co-founders.
Yeah.
She talked at a conference that I go to every year with Diego, and it's the ASLA conference. And she talked about the importance of pollinators. And, you know, I was so excited to go. It was when it was in Chicago. So it was like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But her name is Patricia, and she's actually Mexican.
And she's a landscape architect?
She's a landscape architect, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and she does beekeeping as well. And so she inspires me a lot with what she does with her designs.
Mm-hmm.
And her nonprofit for, mm-hmm. you know, for bees, the importance of bees and things like that. And she's actually the granddaughter of an architect in Mexico.
Oh,
Okay. So I don't know exactly like what his name is, but I can't remember her last name. But her name is Patricia. She's really cool.
I'll find it and put the link on, on the website.
They do really amazing work. They do like, you know, they did this school design for kids to enjoy the outdoors. And like she did this really cool. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's her and her team, you know, but she does a lot of good stuff.
So you are a landscape contractor and designer.
Mm-hmm.
But your goal is to eventually be a landscape architect. Yes. What is the difference?
So, como una maestra me dijo una vez, like a landscape contractor and a landscape architect are two completely two different animals. Like, and I'm like, what? But once I got into it and learning the, you know, the program and everything, it is landscape architects. Or when you study landscape architecture, you can go into city planning. You can design zoos. You can design theme parks. You can design parks, cemeteries, like all kinds of stuff. And you don't have to install it. When you get licensed as a landscape contractor,
mm-hmm.
when you do design work, you have to install it just for liability reasons. You know, like you would be responsible. So like a landscape architect firm can hire a landscape contractor to install their designs.
I got it.
So, but with landscape contracting, like you can do designs yourself, but if you're approved, you have to build it. You know, you can't subcontract that out. Maybe you can, like, in certain levels. Like, I don't know, like, if you want a fountain to be installed, like, you can call someone who specializes in fountains, but, like, you're more responsible for, you know,
right,
for that sort of work. And so that's why when I graduated college, I started Earth Green. And then Mother's Studio is really the educational and research you know, studio to really get involved with my community.
So it's two components to your company, earthgreenlandscapes.com. That's your website, right?
Yeah.
So you can go there, and that's the bigger umbrella company, the landscaping company, and then Mother Earth Studio is your more educational.
Yeah, it's like the sister company. Yeah, okay. Of Earth Green, because Earth Green supports Mother's Studio. That's why I can do free workshops and things like that. Like,
true.
Yeah, like Diego told me the other day, because I was so like stressed out about work or whatever, and he's like, look, if you don't have a job, you can't help the bees. And I'm like, I know. I'm like, yeah. like he kept it real with me. Like,
snap out of it.
I thought you were chingando, and then I'm like snapping out. Oh, you're right. You're right. I can do this. So he's amazing. So
cool.
And he studied with me too. So it's, I think we understand each other in some certain levels, because landscape architecture is different.
And what did your partner Diego study?
He studied landscape architecture too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
man, you guys are good. The future for you guys.
Power landscape architect
couple.
Yeah.
It's Melissa y Diego. A Chicano, no, Frida y Diego. But that's not why I chose him as a partner, not because of his name.
You're going to change your name to Frida.
I know.
So your power couple name will be Meliego?
Melia.
Ew. That's mejor Miego. Ya me Miego.
Oh, my God.
Or Dielisa.
So oh, Dielisa.
I like that. Yes. Oh, you know, you were just talking about the, you know, the Aztecs and the Mayans and things like that, like the environment in which they built their homes.
Because in the break we were, Melissa stated once again the importance of talking about our roots when it comes to understanding nature and understand nature within our cities. And I mentioned, for example, recent drawings that have come out about Tenochtitlan, the city where the Aztecs thrive, which now is Mexico City. There were fountains, there were community gardens, there were individual gardens. And the idea is that when we think about Mesoamerican cities, we only think about stone. We always think about pyramid stones and that's it. But we always forget that those cities were designed out of stone. They were painted of different colors. And a color will have an association with a plant. The plant will have an association to religion. That religion will have an association to a god.
Mm-hmm.
So everything from the aesthetics all the way to religion was all related. So mm-hmm. growing a plant, growing a flower with a specific color, with a specific use in medicinal for ritual, it all fed each other. And as you say, the Aztecs fed the sun, so the sun kept feeding them, meaning mm-hmm. through sacrifice, et cetera, et cetera. Right. So it was all this retroalimentación
yeah.
within and the designing of gardens within a city like Tenochtitlan was essential mm-hmm. for those ideological things to flow. And
right.
so when you talk about wanted to become, when you talk about your roots and your family, and when you talk about wanted to become a landscape architect, it reminded me of that, of the fact that we have to come back to that, to the fact
right.
that we always created cities with yeah. that in mind.
And so, and keep it sacred, you
exactly.
know, which is the importance of anything.
Yeah,
you know?
And regardless of people's religion, mm-hmm. understanding that it all comes down to nature, no mm-hmm. matter what we do.
Right.
So.
Right. And I want to learn more about that. So
I'll find some. Yeah. I'm going to teach an Aztec class next semester. So mm-hmm. I have some readings that it's super interesting.
Me?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
That's
absolutely.
So awesome.
Yay. Yes.
Okay. Do you have any recommendations, Pablito?
Yes. I have a collective/podcast that it's pretty young. By the time this podcast came out, they're probably going to have 10 or 12 episodes. And the name of the podcast is The Colores Radio.
The Colores Radio.
They are based out of Dallas, and they have a collective where they organize parties. They basically create spaces for the Latinx and Chicano.
Chicanx.
Sounds funny. So the Chicano people in Dallas. So based off their collective, they decided to also do a podcast. And again, it's relatively new. The name of the podcast is The Colores Radio, and I highly recommend it. I will post a link to both their website. I think they only have a Facebook website, but a link to their podcast, which is everywhere. It's on iTunes, SoundCloud, etc., etc., etc. Te toca.
Oh my goodness, is it my turn already? Okay, I'm stalling because I don't have anything. But no, you mentioned one of my favorite podcasts of all times, and that's 99% Invisible.
So good.
I think I've talked about it on the podcast before, but that was like a year ago maybe.
Like in
so
the beginning, yeah.
Refresher, the episode that you're talking about the palm trees is very interesting. There's another episode that I love called used to be a Taco Bell, so they talk, or used to be a Pizza Hut, so they talk about architecture and how it's been repurposed, mm-hmm. especially by immigrant communities. So you go to a lot of places in, let's say, California, and a lot of the old Pizza Huts, which mm-hmm. are very, you know, you can distinguish the architecture because all the Pizza Huts made in the 70s, 80s, or whatever, are
the hut.
They're in the same shape.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But now there's like a lot of them are like Korean barbecue places
oh.
or Mexican restaurants, right?
Yeah.
That's a really interesting episode. And I love the episode that they did on Chinatown and
oh,
how
yes.
the first Chinatown in the United States was in San Francisco. And how it was, you go to Chinatown and, there's definitely like a Chinatown style. And they even mentioned the Chinatown in Las Vegas that was built much later in the 90s.
This is one of the newest ones.
Yeah. Yeah, and how the Chinese people in the original Chinatown in San Francisco actually hired white people to design their Chinatown to attract other white people.
Mm.
So it's just such an interesting history because when you go to China, it doesn't look like Chinatown anywhere. Like, why would there be a McDonald's that's a pagoda? You know, like, that's not what that architecture signifies in China, right? But it's just so cool just to see the histories of our architecture, and it even goes into landscape architecture a lot of times in the show. So I highly recommend it. It's called 99%
Invisible.
It's called 99% Invisible. And shout out to Roman Mars.
He's beautiful.
His voice. Oh my God.
Mira, lo escucho.
I know.
En una misma pasión.
He also has a really like melodramatic playlist on Spotify if you want to listen to it.
Oh my God, I want to listen to it.
He always posts what he listens to and I fall asleep.
That's awesome.
Anyway, back to reality. Hello, Melissa. ¿Cómo estás?
Bienvenida. Ah, no.
Hi.
So, where can people find you on the internet? Where are you at?
So, I love Instagram.
Okay.
So, you can find me on meli.earth. Uh-huh. And you can find me also as Mother Studio. And then earthgreenlandscapes.com. It's on the works. It's on the works. So.
Good.
And yeah, that's where you can find me on social media.
And once again, remember to visit our website. All the links to all the amazing recommendations of Melissa are going to be there, including where to find her and get her advice, because you need it, people. You absolutely need it. I want to thank you for being here, because this is an episode that I didn't know how much we needed. And I think our audience really needed to listen to this. And I even needed to listen to this. So from the bottom of my heart, like, thank you very much for coming to our space.
It's my pleasure. Wow. I love you guys. Oh, I love you guys.
We love you. Or I love you. I'm going to speak for myself.
Mabelito, you love me?
I love you, Melissa.
Oh, that's enough. Okay. No, but in all seriousness, I think the one thing that I've learned from you, especially after this conversation, is how important it is to create our own spaces. Mm-hmm. And we say that a lot on Latinos Who Lunch, but now I'm thinking of it in a literal sense, like creating a garden, a sanctuary for yourself, for you to go and de-stress and be able to reflect and meditate is super important. And I mean, thinking about it now, that's what my grandma was creating, even though her bedroom was also that place because that's where she would pray, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But maybe a more contemporary, more universal place really is a garden, because you're not only spending time with yourself, but you're also connected to the earth around you.
Right.
And that idea of taking a moment and slowing down is so important, especially I'm realizing that now, where I am so busy right now that my whole life is scheduled for like the next year and a half.
Right.
And so having a place like a garden, like, you know, I have my plants upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's something that is much needed. And I don't know what I would do if I didn't have space like that. Right. And you could always be improving on those spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, thank you for that advice. And I think I'm going to, you know, take some time and, you know, as they say, slow down and smell the roses.
Yeah.
Stop and smell the roses.
Because we always talk about disconnecting with all this bullshit television, right?
Yeah.
But to ideologically disconnect from all the bullshit of the world with nature and space that you create, and you helping people do that, that's amazing. Yeah. That's invaluable. So thank you again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I love it. I love it. So, and you know what I was going to say?
Yeah.
You know, when you were in Miami,
yeah,
and you went to some botanical garden, didn't you? Or something
yes,
like
I
that?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes.
See, you disconnected from, you know, your work, and mm-hmm. you just went out and got inspired. And I see that in your art.
Okay, Mijo. Keep talking.
Mijo, your art is just seeing the not so much transition, but like you're following your curiosities, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that's so important, because if you're curious to slow down, slow down. And if you're curious to look at a plant, you know, take it easy. Look at the plant. Because I think like I see so much inspiration, even when you did like some kind of like Frida piece.
Yeah.
Right. With her, you know, the landscapes that she was, because she loved plants. You know, she loved animals.
Yeah.
And so, and then the paintings that you did, the replications of the painting. What is his name?
Velasquez.
Yeah, Velasco. Mm-hmm. And then also a recent piece that you did. It's like a piece of an environment, you know, the city of El Madrid.
In
Albuquerque.
Yeah.
So, and then animals are playing a big role too, mijo. So,
you're changing
cool.
my life.
No, I'm not saying it because I'm changing. No, because you love nature.
Yeah, I do.
And so maybe subconsciously you're also creating things, but in a different perspective.
I like to be inside and enjoy nature.
Yeah. And you love wetlands, park.
No, I'm just playing.
You love nature.
I'm just playing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. I know. I just put that together. I do make a lot of work about nature.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do. And
whoa,
it's beautiful.
She just put it together.
Damn. Okay.
I noticed.
I mean, you just put it. Yeah.
One day you'll make me a piece of Frida piece with the monkeys. And, you know, when I essentially have my studio where I design and do, you know, that's the goal is to really do that and have my garden as my lab and then just invite you guys over all the time. Always invited.
I love it.
Carne asada.
Los tacos.
You said carne asada in an Oprah voice. Yes. And you get a carne asada. And you get a carne asada.
And you, Babilito. I'm so excited to learn more about the history of Mexican.
Let's start talking. There's a lot of things that now they're making sense.
Yeah.
So yes, absolutely.
I'm so excited.
Well, thank you again, Melissa. We really loved having you here, and hopefully we'll see you in the future on Latinos Who Lunch. We'll hear you in the future.
You are officially re-invited.
I wonder what we're going to eat next.
All right. As always, you can find us at latinoswholunch.com. Send your emails to latinoswholunch@gmail.com. You can find us on Spotify. I mean, obviously, you're listening to us, so you know where to hear us. So I'm going to not do that part. But, you know, something that really helps us here is when you rate and review us on whatever platform you're using. If you're on Apple Podcasts, go ahead and rate us 5 stars.
5 stars only.
Because the more reviews we get, the more visible we are, and visibility is
essential.
Tell your mama, tell your dad, tell your cousin, tell your tia, tell your tio. Latinos Who Lunch is here, baby. I'm Fabi Fav.
Y la hierba se movía, se movía.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.